I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to It's Your Agribusiness. Pleased to have the South Dakota Farmers Union in this hour, as we traditionally do the second Tuesday of the month. You can listen live or go to the podcast on the South Dakota Farmers Union website or our Kello AM website. As we always do, we have to make it official. Welcome to the South Dakota Farmers Union Ag Business Report. South Dakota Farmers Union, uniting farmers, ranchers, and rural communities to strengthen South Dakota Farmers Union. And we do this, the governor's getting ready to talk about her budget. South Dakota Farmers Union will be opening their 105th annual convention. It'll be virtual this year. And a keynote speaker, a guy that South Dakota knows, Mr. Tom Daschle. Legislative session not far away, some changes, still some thoughts about 2021. We'll talk about that. You'll meet the Evensons, the Farm Family of the Month, a world champion balloon shooting cowboy. Two world championships he holds right now. Laura Edwards will talk about the weather. Doug Somke is getting us set for all that's going to happen in South Dakota. Is it in Huron, Luke?
Bill, good morning. No, you're getting me from my house again today.
Oh, my goodness. But Doug and the group will be out of Huron tomorrow?
Yeah, we're having our 105th annual state convention tomorrow. A lot of our staff is going to be in the office just making sure everything runs smoothly.
All right, we're going to start, and we're going to talk business. Are you ready?
Let's go.
We start with East River Electric and concerns that they have that Dakota Energy is considering leaving the East River Electric Power Co-op and signing a contract with a Colorado energy broker named Guzman. The group was started in recent years by Florida investors promising cheap green energy to replace local co-ops. Mr. Chris Studer, East River Co-op, you with us this morning?
Hey, good morning, Bill. Thanks for having us on, and thanks to Farmers Union.
Tim McCarthy, CEO, Sioux Valley Energy, with us as well.
Yeah, good morning, Bill.
All right, guys. What's at stake here? It looks like one of the partners wants to go a different direction. You guys have been helping that group, and I think I saw, was it $2.3 million had gone to Dakota Energy over the last 10 years just to help them?
Well, yeah, and thanks again, Bill. You know, the what's happened here is that there's a for-profit, out-of-state energy broker that you mentioned called Guzman Energy. They were just started a couple years ago, and what essentially they're trying to do is come and lure electric cooperatives away from their local wholesale power suppliers in an attempt to, you know, steal away essentially South Dakota consumers and profit off of them. And so Dakota Energy filed a lawsuit about a month ago seeking to buy out of its long-term contract. And, you know, it's an unfortunate situation because we've served Dakota Energy for 70 years and all of our other cooperative member systems because they all got together back then and they said, we want to work together to provide power, and they have a voice in the boardroom in how their wholesale power rates are set, something that they would not get from a for-profit out-of-state company.
East River, if you will, is pretty much every county in eastern South Dakota, and you have some in Minnesota. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Bill. So back in the 1950s, the electric co-op member systems, they said, hey, we need to create our own wholesale power supplier. And so just about all the counties in eastern South Dakota, and then we've got several over in western Minnesota that banded together way back when. And we signed long-term contracts because these are long-term capital-intensive projects. You know, to bring power to the prairie, we've got a lot of infrastructure out there. And you know, members like Sioux Valley Energy that Tim leads, way back when, they said, hey, we got to work together, you guys. And they're still doing that today.
Again, the focus you guys have had is pretty much future generations, negotiating prices. You don't have knee-jerk reactions to sudden changes with a board that's well plugged in.
Well, and that's a very good point, Bill. You know, we take the long-term approach here, and Tim can talk about just the long-term nature of this business. And, you know, it takes a lot of money to build out the infrastructure that it takes to serve all the members. And Tim's got a lot of members out there. It takes transmission and takes generation, transmission, and then distribution infrastructure. And, you know, we have a voice in being able to, you know, set the wholesale prices. And, you know, Tim has a voice at the table, and he's got a board member that sits on East River's board and has a voice in the process.
Tell us about that survey that shows 98% of your members believe that you guys have exceeded expectations.
Yeah, so every couple of years we do a survey of our membership and out there, and everybody, just about everybody's pretty darn satisfied. We and we typically have in the 90s, and in the last one we had 98% said that they were satisfied and with the service that they provide. And you know, Tim at his co-op at Sioux Valley Energy, you know, they do a lot of progressive programs, rebates, incentives, working with their members, engaging their members to make sure that the co-op is going in the right direction.
So as we look at this, if they're hitting one of the different partners that you have, they must be talking to the others.
Well, we're not sure about that just yet. You know, I think what the concerning part is, you know, you've got a for-profit entity in Guzman Energy that, you know, is trying to lure electric co-ops and municipal electrics away from these long-term contracts. You know, and like I said, we take a long-term approach. And, you know, Tim, I don't know if you want to jump in here and maybe talk about kind of the long-term nature of the business and whether you've seen this happening in, you know, around Sioux Valley with Guzman Energy, or if, you know, what the future might look like for that.
Sure, Chris. Yeah, and I apologize, I didn't interrupt there. I did want to comment on the long-term relationship. Obviously, at Sioux Valley distribution level, we have a lot of concerns for the East River members as a whole, the Sioux Valley members, and also for the Dakota members. And while we haven't seen active, you know, participation in any conversations with Guzman in our area, Guzman is a company who's out there, and they are talking with several cooperatives, not only in South Dakota, but across the nation. As far as the long-term commitment, you know, the cooperative members of East River, we came together years ago and we created East River, and we all have a financial interest in East River, and that interest is really interdependent when it comes to the investment we have made in procuring resources to provide our members long-term power supply stability, both in price and reliable service. And 5 years ago, we all had an opportunity to recommit, and each cooperative vetted that that decision in their own respective boardrooms. And at the end of the day, we all signed the contract extensions, and we all have an obligation to each other to fulfill that commitment, really. And, you know, if one entity is allowed to break that commitment, it leaves all the other members with the burden of paying for that portion of the investment we've made, you know, for the long term. So it's bad for the membership that remains, and I believe ultimately this deal will be bad for Dakota's membership, as the proposition they're placing on the table really carries with it a huge amount of long-term risk and a lack of long-term price stability.
Chris Studer with the East River Co-op, Tim McCarthy, CEO of Sioux Valley Energy. You guys have been well-tested because we've had a lot of challenges over the last few years. My guess is you've responded very well.
Well, we've done our best. You know, through this pandemic, our electric co-op members have been very resilient. You know, we've got a lot of linemen and folks that work out in the elements, and, you know, they can't really work from home, right? When you build power lines and power poles and infrastructure, you can't work from home. And so our employees have stepped up and really done a great job of continuing to keep the lights on, because, you know, obviously, you know, electricity is powers people's lives day in and day out. And, you know, so they've done a fantastic job.
So the average citizen that counts on you guys, what are they thinking about this situation or this kind of one of the things that you're doing in addition to the letter that you're sending out?
Well, you know, when the general consumer out there, you know, electricity can be a complicated business, and you get a bill every month, and you kind of know how it works, but there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and that really speaks to kind of the long-term nature of our business, because, you know, East River has been around for 70 years. We have a lot of poles. We have over 3,000 miles of transmission lines out there. The distribution cooperatives have many more thousands of miles that have been built over the years. And we take a long-term approach. We're planning out 20 and 30 years ahead. We're buying land for substations that won't get built on for maybe a decade because we're planning the system. We're trying to stabilize rates while trying to respond to growth. I mean, in that Sioux Falls area, and Tim can talk about this, we've seen a lot of growth in that Sioux Falls area. And that takes investment to serve new businesses, and new businesses need electricity. And so Tim and his group have done a fantastic job of responding to new growth. You never know when a new business is going to pop up, so you got to be able to respond to that. I don't know, Tim, if you have anything to add there.
Yeah, I'd just say, you know, well, East River is trying to bolster their infrastructure. At the distribution level, we are doing the same thing. We have a long-term plan. You know, we have a very aggressive work plan where we're replacing parts of our system that have aged over each year. We're doing about 125 miles replacement each year. Plus, we're keeping up with really explosive growth, particularly in the Sioux Falls area, but also in the rural area, even areas where you might not necessarily see new businesses. The capacity of the energy they're using is continuing to rise. So you have to replace your infrastructure to be able to handle their needs out there. So as just at like Chris says, at the transmission level, at the distribution level, we are dealing with an incredible amount of growth ourselves and replacement.
Tim McCarthy, CEO, Sioux Valley Energy, Chris Studer, East River Co-op. People want more information. Is there a website they can visit?
Well, we do have a lot of articles on eastriver.coop that really explain the wholesale power contract, why that's so important to have a long-term, stable, certain contract for business, for growth, and for long-term rate stability. We've got some different articles about, you know, how rates are built, what you need to know about how your electric bill is created. And then we've got a really nice article about neighbors helping neighbors, because Bill, you know this, and Farmers Union was at the forefront of helping cooperatives start years and years ago. It's neighbors helping neighbors. Nobody else was going to provide power to rural areas until electric cooperatives were built, where neighbors went around and said, sign up for the electric co-op. We got to provide power to ourselves because for-profit companies won't do it for us. And so it's neighbors helping neighbors to provide a service that everyone needs, and that still happens today.
Let's talk again soon. We appreciate you guys. Good luck with it. You're the energy we need.
Thanks so much, Bill. Appreciate it. And thanks, Luke and Farmers Union.
Luke will be coming back, and Steckel out of D.C., and we'll also talk with Mitch Richter in Pierre, where the governor will speak.
Day begins. Morning colors in the east. Neighborhoods awaken. Sounds of life. A car. Walking a pet. Neighbors awake. High above a cloudless sky, or maybe a churning gray. A stiff breeze. Or still, the community begins their work. It's a work of caring, of finance, of health, of home, churches, parks, and flowing water. Breaking bread with friends and families. Trust, prayers, smiles, hope. The day ends, evening colors in the west. Neighborhoods sleep safely. Isn't it great to live in South Dakota? A poem of reality from the Tony Bachman Group, the trusted name in real estate.
Nothing has embodied the American spirit like the family farmer. Year after year, they continue to work the land, and plant their crops. Through droughts, floods, and uncertain markets, they keep that spirit alive with another crop harvested for the next generation. And for that, we tip our hats to them. Farmers Union Insurance, protecting those that protect America's food source.
Rush Limbaugh, weekdays 11 to 2. Kello, News Talk 1320, 107.9.
Luke has rejoined me. Luke, busy first segment.
Really was, Bill. And I wanted to add in there, I can appreciate Chris for hitting on the point of cooperatives. Yeah, South Dakota Farmers Union was founded, really, to start up cooperatives. And I can appreciate what East River is doing with their Reed fund that they have out there and just the way that they give back to the community. So great first segment.
A good friend, Ann Steckel, are you on the phone this morning?
Hi, Bill. Great to hear your voice.
We don't get to go to conventions together anymore. What's the deal?
I know. I always look forward to making the trip out to South Dakota from Washington, D.C. Hopefully next year we'll be able to see each other in person.
All right, Luke, introduce us. What are we going to do in this segment?
Ann, good morning. Ann is with us with National Farmers Union. She's a biofuels advisor. And Ann, just wanted to have you on this morning and kind of give us an update with, the change in administration coming up. What do we see with the ethanol industry?
Well, thanks again, Luke and Bill, for having me. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Well, we do have a change in administration coming up, which I think will be a welcome change for us. We've had a lot of instability with biofuels policy under the Trump administration with the granting of the small refinery exemptions, the administration of the renewable fuel standard. Right now, we have a delay in actually putting out the volumes for next year's renewable fuel standard. We've had a lot of different obstacles to contend with this administration, and so we're looking forward to a new administration and educating them about the benefits of ethanol and certainly the benefits of higher level blends of ethanol.
And I was reading an article that Jim Sire co-authored with Glacial Lakes Energy, and in it he addressed the current status of the RFS. The renewable fuel standard is kind of like a Model T, and we need a Cadillac. Can you kind of elaborate on that? How is the RFS being implemented right now?
Well, the RFS has been helpful in terms of growing the biofuels industry and increased consumption of biofuels. I think we're trying to be constructive and look forward to a post-2022 year. The RFS doesn't expire in 2022, but the administering of the entire RFS program shifts from what's currently in the statute or the law over to EPA's ability to write it or rewrite it or do their will with it. And so I think that as we're looking post-2022, we're trying to think about what is the best policy options that we have out there for growing the renewable fuels industry. Certainly, we have been, as the National Farmers Union and South Dakota Farmers Union, one of the largest issues we have been working on is thinking big picture and being very forward-thinking about a move to higher-level blends of ethanol. We've now got year-round sales of E15 available, which is certainly positive. But we really need to be thinking about those higher-level blends in order for the consumers to really maximize the benefit of this product. Certainly, there are tremendous environmental benefits to ethanol. There's also an octane benefit to ethanol that many of the automakers have been looking for, and the consumers as well. And so we think that the higher level blends of ethanol are really a win-win scenario. And through different policy options, we can achieve those higher level blends of ethanol in nationwide usage of them.
Well, ethanol is certainly important, higher octane, it's cleaner burning, helps eliminate these greenhouse gases. There's many groups out there, Ann, like ACE, RFA, Growth, that are all ethanol within the ethanol industry. How can we ensure, going forward that we can have kind of a unified ethanol industry? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, that's always a good question. You know, I think we try to do our best to be collaborative, to work with all of the biofuels groups to try to drive forward the most momentum for ethanol. We don't always agree on how those policy options look or what they might be and the time frame in which they might be, but we're going to try to continue to be constructive in our working relationships with one another. And certainly as we all pivot towards educating the incoming Biden administration, we have both a challenge and an opportunity to think about the different policies that might be available for this incoming administration to do to try to drive that higher usage of ethanol blends.
Ann Steckel, go ahead.
You've been very forward on. I was going to say, and again, you know, it's all about E30 and higher level blends of ethanol for an FU.
There you go. Ann Steckel, National Farmers Union, always appreciate you keeping us straight. We'll get back to South Dakota with you here soon.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Luke, we've got a gentleman joining us out of Pierre today. The governor's a little busy. Mitch, can you explain what's up today?
Budget address today, Bill. Statutorily required for the governor to give the legislature her budget this day of the year, and we're going to hear how she wants to spend all the money we've got.
And I understand she's not doing a news conference until tomorrow. She's got two news conferences, Huron and Rapid City, I believe, tomorrow.
Yeah, a little out of the ordinary. Generally, I think they meet with the press ahead of time, kind of give them the highlights of what the budget's going to be, then embargo it until after the address, and then the press can deal it. But we'll see how it works today. You know, last year the budget was just under $5 billion, and this year I would say we'll probably break that $5 billion mark. A lot of one-time money to be spent this year. The COVID money that came in from the federal government, you know, we replaced a lot of state employee salaries with that money, so there's some excess money that will have to be spent. I'm sure she'll have a plan for it. The legislature, I'm sure, has some other ideas on how that money can be spent, and we'll start it on January 12th and see where it goes.
As I understand it, there's a deadline on that money being earmarked for the end of the year. Is that correct?
That's right. The legislature government appropriations committee met yesterday and heard from Bureau of Finance and Management where they're at on that. It looks like they've got a couple hundred million yet to try to get designated for spending, and they're still, of course, working through a lot of grant applications that they made available to businesses, healthcare facilities, a number of different entities in South Dakota in the last 90 days. It's been a big job for government to try to spend money. You wouldn't think that would be a big deal, but it's hard to spend a lot of money and make sure that people are being accountable for how it's being spent.
All right, Mitch, we're going to have to take a break. We're going to come back with you after we meet the Farm Family of the Month. But as I understand it, there's something else on her plate right now, and the Highway Patrol Superintendent Rick Miller and a sheriff actually saying, hey, the people voted for this recreational marijuana. Let's do something about it. We'll talk about that upcoming.
Stacy Dykstra's with me, Kane Ellsworth.
Let me tell you what our values are and what matters to us. Our values are the people. People matter. We want to help communities and businesses thrive and succeed. That's important to us. And so when you have your values laid out, when you make decisions about running a business, you need to be thinking through the context of your values being a funnel. It's really important to us that we keep people at the forefront. And give us a call. We'd love to tell you a little bit more. You can go to our website, which is KaneElsworth.com.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at Kello.com. From the Kello.com News Center, this is your Kello Agribusiness Report.
With your Ag News, I'm Farmer Ranch reporter Sam Halstengard. We'll talk about the McDonald's McRib comeback and how that affects the pork industry. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Hi, Sarah Heinrich here. My friends at the Steffes Group have the following upcoming online auctions. A Steffes Construction Consignment Auction. Bidding opens Thursday, December 3rd at 8 a.m. and closes Thursday, December 10th at 2 p.m. The Jeff Lead Home Retirement Auction in Washburn, North Dakota. Bidding opens Thursday, December 8th at 8 a.m. and closes Thursday, December 15th at 10 a.m. For a complete description and photos of equipment for these and other upcoming auctions, go to steffesgroup.com right now. Go with Steffes. They're the best.
The McDonald's McRib is available again. National Pork Board Director of Marketing Communications Jason Menke says that this is the 38th year the McRib has been on the McDonald's limited time menu.
Which is really kind of an unprecedented mark for a limited time offer in the quick service restaurant industry. Now, what's unique about this year is that this is the first year since 2012 that the McRib is going to be available nationwide at the same time.
McDonald's is actively promoting the McRib. Menke says McRib fans are also active on social media.
There are even some unofficial aficionados who have developed websites that have McRib trackers. So when it's on a regional basis, there are sites that you can find on the internet that show you where you can go find it in different parts of the country. And I think that's just the absolute testament to the power that this sandwich has. It is really part of the national conscience.
The national rollout of the McRib limited time offer coincides with a very uncertain year. Menke says the comfort of a familiar sandwich is welcomed.
It's been a difficult year for a number of reasons, right? We've had a contentious election, a global pandemic, and many of us are feeling disconnected and apart from each other. Obviously, this Thanksgiving looked and felt a lot different for a lot of families. We also know that when we look at other cultures around the globe, and when family and friends come together over a meal, there's a better than even chance that pork is going to be that showcase protein, especially when you look in Asian and Latin American cultures. Here comes McDonald's, right? Maybe sensing our national anxiety and frustration, and giving us all the opportunity to gather over this savory, saucy, delectable pork patty. Is the McRib going to solve all of our problems and all of our woes? No, but it's absolutely a tasty start.
With your Ag News, I'm Farmer Ranch reporter Sam Halstengard.
Partly cloudy skies today and very mild. Our afternoon high at 53 degrees, a westerly wind at 10 to 20. Low tonight, 32, mostly clear. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, even warmer, high at 58. And on Thursday, a few more clouds increasing, a bit cooler, high at 46 degrees. That's your weather update from the Storm Center at Kendallland TV. I'm meteorologist Brian Karstens.
Stay informed. Hear Fox News every hour on the hour. You won't miss a thing when you listen to Calo. News Talk 1320, 107.9.
With South Dakota Farmers Union's Luke Rendell, I'm Bill Zortman, and this is our monthly South Dakota Farmers Union show. You can visit the SDFU website at sdfu.org. It has the information about the show and the podcast from start to finish. Time to meet our Farmers Union Farm Family of the Month, Corson County Ranch Family, and McIntosh Ranchers Sherry and Dennis Evenson. All right, who gets to talk first?
Dennis.
Okay, I guess I'll go first.
Dennis, when we start talking about what you're doing, all the things that you're doing for South Dakota, you do a lot of multitasking from what I can see.
Yes.
Tell us about what you do and why Farmers Union and just being a part of South Dakota is big for both you and Sherry.
Well, we operate a cow-calf ranch just southwest of McIntosh, and in addition to that, we both have full-time jobs with the USDA. I've been with the Natural Resources Conservation Service for about 32 years. I'm a civil engineering tech here at McIntosh, and I work in multiple counties. I mainly help with the design and construction of different engineering projects that NRCS is involved with. Sherry is the county executive director here with FSA in McIntosh. So we kind of see both sides of it. We work with people. We work with agriculture. We both grew up ranching in the area here, and so that's kind of all we know, and it's what we want to do, and we are able to work with a lot of good producers in our area, and it makes us see a lot of different ways to do things, and innovative ways to do things. Keeps it pretty interesting.
Sherry, from your side, you're a county executive director for the Farm Service Agency. We're at a year that has just been crazy.
Yes.
What have you been able to do this year to make sure people know that you are plugged in?
Well, this year we administer the CFAP program. That's the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. And so we have seen most of our producers, worked with them about three times this year, two times for the two different coronavirus food assistance programs, and then with acreage reporting. So we work with them from spring clear around through fall, and work with them very closely. So we hear a lot of their needs and what's going on out in their worlds, and try to help them with whatever program we can find that helps them out.
Sherry, how many years you've been doing the county executive director's type role for the Farm Service Agency?
I just became the county executive director last March, but I've worked for FSA for 16 and a half years now.
All right, Dennis, you get to be the good guy, okay? You ready for this?
Yes.
Why is your wife perfect for that role, and why does she take care of people so well?
She's a very caring person. She cares. She wants to see people succeed. She wants to help people in any way she can. And she's a meticulous person. She still is a certified public accountant. So she has that mindset of getting things right and getting things done accurately and correctly. So I think that's a big benefit. She wants to make sure these programs are rolled out in a way that help people the best that she can.
Sherry, about Dennis, what he does to design, stake, and review all these projects. Is he a good listener? Does he take good care of people?
Yeah, everybody respects him. He knows everybody. Doesn't matter where we go, he knows everybody, it seems like. He's often called before and after hours. He's been doing it for over 30 years, so he has a lot of experience, and people really respect his knowledge and different ideas that he can come up with to help them with their engineering projects.
One of the things that we always talk about in South Dakota is passing the torch to the next generation, and working with Ranch Legacy and being passionate about the sustainability seem to be important to both of you.
Yes, very much.
So give us an example.
Well, what we try to do on our ranch is make it more sustainable. It's a work in progress. We've got a long ways to go, but we've made some changes lately. And we learn from other people, too. I learn from NRCS, and I also learn just as much from other producers who are trying different things. And you hear NRCS talk about soil health a lot. It is a big deal, and we need to not only conserve, I work for a conservation agency, but not only our goal is not to just conserve, but also improve. And that's for the next generation, so we can keep healthy soils and keep producing food for the world.
Sherry and Dennis Evenson, South Dakota Farmers Union Farm Family of the Month, Corson County Ranch. Okay, your job now in the next 2 minutes, each take a minute, please. And I'm sorry I have to be so directive this morning, but I don't get much time. And that is to why 2021 can be better. What would you say, Sherry?
Well, I'm anxious. Here at USDA, we haven't been able to work with our customers much face-to-face or have them in the building. So I can't wait to get back to actually interacting more with our producers. It's the only way to truly have good customer service, I believe, is to let them come in. Sometimes it's more than just, the actual signing of the forms. It's your local people trying to help your local farmers and ranchers. So I can't wait to get back to normal and actually see our producers in person.
Dennis, what is normal?
What is normal? Not this year, that's for sure. Hopefully, I think next year maybe we'll turn the tide, get past the COVID problem, or at least make some improvements on it. I think one thing that stands out to me that we've learned from this is how vulnerable our food supply chain is. You know, we saw that with our markets and stuff, and shortages of meat and things like that happened back like in March and April. I think that might have awakened people to the importance of our food supply chain, and I think and I hope that we can more directly and more locally process more foods and make it more foolproof for issues like this, and make it more, I guess, more a little more reliable, and hopefully improve our markets for our producers, because they're stressed, and it's been a tough old several years now, and we need some market improvement to keep people going.
McIntosh Rancher Sherry and Dennis Evenson, the Farmers Union, Corson County Ranch Family, the Family of the Month. Thanks for all you do. Do it even better in 2021, will you?
We'll try. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Luke, what a wonderful family.
Bill, we love Dennis and Sherry. I mean, they're just the salt of the earth. They're hard workers, as you hear there, working multiple jobs and just great stewards of the land. So we're proud to have them as members.
All right, we're going to set up Mitch coming back with us. We got about 60 seconds. Talk about the convention and how it's virtual and who can be a part of it.
So we're virtual, obviously, for obvious reasons, COVID. It's going to be tomorrow. You can join right on our website here. Go to sbfu.org and then look for the 105th Annual State Convention link. It's virtual. We're going to do it over Zoom. Keynote speakers, Tom Daschle, continues to be a big advocate for ag producers. So he's going to be our keynote speaker talking about various issues that align with SDFU. Ethanol, obviously, even Medicaid expansion. You know, we'll get into some good topics there. But again, it's going to be virtual from 1 to 4. Gives us an opportunity to talk about some serious issues that we identify as special orders that we can kind of take forward on to peer and to Washington, D.C., to our congressional delegates out there, and just try to better serve our farmers and ranchers here in South Dakota.
All right, Luke, we'll have more from Pierre in the special session and the pushback on the recreational marijuana. Plus, we'll hear from Laura Edwards. And, oh, yes, we got a two-time world champion at the same time, balloon shooting cowboy from South Dakota, started at Pukwana.
What does your small business want from a healthcare plan in these changing times? You want employees to have access to the largest network of doctors. You want flexible plans to fit your needs and your budget. But mostly, you want peace of mind, knowing your employees and company will be taken care of. It's why 8 out of 10 small businesses choose Wellmark Blue Cross and Blue Shield. See how we can help you take control. Find your best plan at wellmark.com/business.
Nothing has embodied the American spirit like the family farmer. Year after year, they continue to work the land and plant their crops. Through droughts, floods, and uncertain markets, they keep that spirit alive with another crop harvested for the next generation. And for that, we tip our hats to them. Farmers Union Insurance, protecting those that protect America's food source.
Sean Hannity, weekdays 2 to 5. Kello, News Talk 1320, 107.9.
Luke is with me. Where are you this morning?
Bill, I'm from my home office here in Wessington Springs.
Wow, Wessington Springs. We have a location in Wessington Springs.
You got me narrowed down.
All right. Mitch Richter, where are you at this morning?
I'm in Rapid City, Bill.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Highway Patrol Superintendent Rick Miller, Pennington County Sheriff, and the fact that they're saying, not so fast, Governor. We have to run through this on the recreational marijuana. What would you tell us?
Well, I'd tell them that they had a year to challenge that, because that language has been sitting in the Secretary of State's office since November of last year. I'm waiting for the people to vote on it this year. And they voted on it and passed it. And let's just get on with life and you know, make it legal like the voters wanted it. But there is going to be a challenge. The Attorney General asked last week that the lawsuit be thrown out. The judge asked for about a month to get them their motions and briefs in. So on January 8th, he will have all of that, and we'll take it from there. The nice thing about these types of things in South Dakota is they don't drag on for years and years. You know, we'll have a decision on this in 4 to 6 months, I think. And at that point, you know, we'll move forward.
Luke, tell us about Mitch. Is he a good lobbyist?
Well, Bill, I would call him one of the best, I guess. I've got great respect for Mitch. He knows so much. He does great work for us at South Dakota Farmers Union, and just very knowledgeable about all the issues. So we're grateful for Mitch.
Fewer Democrats. What's that going to do to the session?
Well, it'll give the Republicans more chance to argue amongst themselves, I think. There are only going to be 11 Democrats this year. There's three in the Senate and eight in the House. And it's unfortunate because the system really works better when you have a divided House almost equally and Senate. You just get better legislation. You don't have a one-party rule. You know, the Senate doesn't even have enough senators to staff all the committees every day. So that's unfortunate. They'll work through that. I hope that, you know, in 2 years we can see some more Democrats in peer. It just makes for a much better system, frankly.
The COVID issue, how's that going to kind of reign over the, or at least be the sky for the legislative session itself? How much concern should we have in South Dakota that everything can be handled properly?
Well, we'll handle it because the schedule says we've got to get it done. And it is going to be challenging. It's going to be a very unique session because there's going to be a lot of people that don't want to come to Pierre. You'll probably have a lot of remote testimony, either, you know, by phone or by Zoom or some other video method. I don't expect that you'll see large groups of people meeting in Pierre, you know, generally. You know, the county commissioners and the nurses and the truckers and, you know, all the various groups in South Dakota show up and push their issues. And they may give you a donut and a cup of coffee while they're standing there talking to you. I just don't think a lot of that's going to take place this year. I think legislators are going to have to learn how to read their email and do some texting. And it's going to be a very unique session. I'm kind of looking forward to it, but a little bit of trepidation, too, because we don't want people getting sick. Vaccine's probably not going to be here until maybe the end of session or even late spring, early summer. So it's going to be a unique session for sure, and they're still working out the details on how it's going to operate.
Mitch Richter, South Dakota Farmers Union's lobbyist, we appreciate you. Don't be a stranger. We're going to talk to you during the session.
Sounds good.
Brett Borkowski is with us. You're a world champion twice. You're holding a couple of titles. And this mounted shooting, tell us what that's about.
Cowboy mounted shooting is a speed-based sport. We have 10 reactive targets, balloons, that we go out. And there are 83, I believe, different patterns that we can run. Five balloons, the randoms. You shoot with the first gun, switch guns round a rundown barrel, and shoot the last five balloons. We're shooting them with black powder blanks, 45 long Colt. So they're crimped. They kind of look like a birdshot shell. The patterns then, the way you run them, some are set specifically. Some can be run different ways. But it's timed, and then you are penalized. If you miss a balloon, it's a five-second penalty. If you hit a barrel, it's a five-second penalty.
You've been doing this 16 years. Pukwana is where you got started. What interested you in doing it? What got you hooked?
just simply watching them practice was enough to get me hooked. I watched them make a run, and I thought, I need to try this. And I tried it, and that day I was hooked. And I have told people time and again, unless you're ready to do it, don't try it. Because if you shoot once, you're hooked. You won't be able to quit.
So, a place I lived for 10 years, and you said you were sorry for me. I kind of enjoyed Amarillo because it had the Big Texan Steak Ranch. Did you find that there?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely a destination. Excellent steaks. I got to watch three different people try to eat the 72-ounce steak, all of which failed. I like beer, and they have very, very good beer there, so it's definitely a destination.
A guy by the name of Andre the Giant, who was a wrestler, ate two of them at one setting, and he is a legend. But 72 ounces, they expect you to eat the potato and a few other things with it. You just don't get away with eating just the meat.
Yeah, it's quite a feat to be able to do that. I believe the record is to eat that entire meal in 4 minutes and 6 seconds, I believe.
And you have to eat it in an hour to make sure you don't have to pay for it. I don't know what they charge for a 72-ounce steak today, but my guess is it wouldn't be cheap.
I asked while we were there. It's $72. So probably worth it.
So the competition in Amarillo, the kind of people that you competed against to be the world champion would be?
The shoot in Amarillo had everyone you expect to be a world champion there. If I was to name a list of people that I've competed against for years, past champions, people that I expect at some point in their career to be world champions, they were there. There were 340 approximately shooters. So to be world champion out of that, actually I was reserve world champion at Amarillo, but to be second out of 340, I'm very proud of that accomplishment. I'm proud of my horses. It meant a lot to me.
There's another association you are a world champion of sorts to as well.
The U.S. Mounted Shooting is a fairly new association. Their world finals was held in Fort Smith, Arkansas. That was just this past weekend. I had the top three placing horses at that shoot. So I was first, second, and third as far as world champions are concerned there. It's based on money earned, but nonetheless, I had a very good shoot there as well.
All right, we got an audience out there that you've just intrigued, just like you got hooked at Puckwana. What would people need to know? Who could they call? How could they get more information? Maybe they want to knock you off your saddle.
There are websites for both associations, the CMSA, Cowboy Mounted Shooting Association. You can go there. There are links to trainers. There are links to clubs, as well as with U.S. Mounted Shooting. Go on their website, check it out. There's YouTube videos. There are a lot of places to go to get help. There are Facebook, Mounted Shooter Soapbox on Facebook. You can go there and ask any question you want, and within moments, you'll have an answer. Training books, training videos, everything you need that I didn't have when I started 16 years ago. I had to learn on my own, but now it's there at the touch of a button.
So who in your family wants to follow in your footsteps?
Right now, there really isn't anyone. I think they're happy to watch what I'm doing and live it through me.
You got to pass the torch, pass that event that you're so proud of, because it sounds to me like it needs to stay alive. It's intriguing.
It is the ultimate American sport. I mean, who wouldn't want to ride a fast horse, shoot a turn-of-the-century six-shooter, and pop some balloons?
That sounds like a great Sunday afternoon. Brett Barkowski, congratulations on what you did, and sometime we'll have to go back to Amarillo and see what we can we can do.
That sounds like a great plan.
Brett, congratulations.
Thank you.
Brett Borkowski, amazing story. And Norm was telling me that he saw Brett on YouTube in Amarillo winning the championship. Now, it's out there, and you can say, I knew him from Pukwana. What a story to have. Luke, another one of those fine people that are tied into South Dakota Farmers Union.
Yeah, what an awesome story. I mean, go on YouTube and just type in Brett Borkowski, and you'll see his events, and it's awesome. It's, you know, super cool. Like you said, he uses a six-shooter, but he also, you know, he uses rifles too. So, I mean, he kind of nailed it when he said, you know, what's more American than that? So really cool guy and really cool event that he does. So pretty proud of that guy.
Laura Edwards, South Dakota State climatologist, talk about All-American. She does things right. And right now, farmers are saying it's a little dry out there. Give us kind of we got about 2.5 minutes, Laura, if you will, share with us what we're seeing in each corner of South Dakota.
Sure, yeah. We've still got drought, and we are holding tight onto that drought. It's been really dry, you know, over the last week. Not a drop of rain across the state at all. And temperatures much above average. You know, tonight in Sioux Falls and the area, the low temperature tonight will be what our average high is. So really much warmer than average. And we're getting into our dry season. Winter's our dry season, so it's pretty tough to get out of a drought in the winter. So we're looking ahead, you know, already at spring and what the situation is. You know, we've got some dry soils out there, excuse me, to get us started. So I think in the spring we're going to rely more on that spring rainfall than we have in a few years.
Those people out there that are saying, okay, Bill, you've got to have some guts. You got to ask her about Christmas. What's it going to be? We've got kids that are just counting on a little snow. I'll bet you're going to make it happen at least two places, Rapid City and Sioux Falls, particularly with the ski lifts.
I'll do what I can, but the forecast at this point doesn't look real optimistic. Where the next 2 weeks still are leaning towards warmer than average temperatures across the state. So, you know, historically, our chances of a white Christmas are about 60 to 70% up here in the north. So we don't always have a white Christmas, but, you know, if we saw a few flakes on Christmas morning, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Laura Edwards, South Dakota State climatologist, always appreciate you weighing in. People know that when you call it, they can expect it. So, Laura, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
So, Luke, we're in our last minute. Did we get things accomplished today?
Boy, that was a full show. I think we got a lot accomplished here today. Bill, I would just like to add another reminder. Our 105th state annual convention is tomorrow, 1 o'clock. It's going to be virtual. And for any of those that are listening that, you know, have some interest in the topics that we cover, we invite you over to sdfu.org. And anyone interested in joining, you can do it right online as well. You know, we've got over 19,000 members here in South Dakota, and we're always looking for more strong advocates of family farms.
When's the last time you had to do a state convention that was virtual? Do you remember a time?
This is the first. is the first and hopefully the only, Bill.
Well, we've learned this year to do a lot of virtual, a lot of Zooming. Just try to get people together. Try to keep our interest alive. And thanks to Luke for all that he does, Doug Somke, Carla Hoffhenke, Wayne Soren, you know, it's quite the group. I'd mention all 19,000, but we're out of time.
Team effort.
Yes, indeed. With Luke Rendell, South Dakota Farmers Union, I'm Bill Zortman. For all 19,000 members, our time is up. We thank you for yours.
Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9, KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at kello.com.